Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome, retired Major Ralph Gannis. How are you doing?
Hey guys, I'm doing great. Thank you.
So you were just down at the big meeting and everything. How did that go?
Yes, I was in Dallas, Texas, this past weekend for the Lancer Conference, which is a gathering of JFK historians and enthusiasts for the subject matter. I was invited in as a speaker, and I did speak on my latest findings that were in my book, The Scorzani Papers, The Evidence for the Plot to Kill JFK.
So, now, did you meet anybody that was really fascinating to you, or was there anybody that you really were glad to run into?
Well, quite frankly, I'm not a JFK historian. I'm a, you know, as you stated, a retired Air Force officer.
Right.
So for me, it was a real honor to be among people who had, you know, been studying this subject matter for some time. I met a number of incredibly intelligent academic historians and scholars and lay people that were just interested, but well received by everyone there, and it was a great gathering, very informative. I had a great time, good people.
Wow. Now, did you spend the whole time watching and did you see all of the other people that were speaking as well?
That's an excellent question, because when I got there, very few people knew who I was, but when I left, I was quite the center of attention. On the Saturday, there were a number of lectures, but there were so many people that wanted to speak to me on sidebar discussions that I caught a single lecture. I was involved in mostly sidebar discussions with historians who wanted to discuss my findings or ask questions about how their particular research might fit into what I've done.
Now, just out of curiosity, when you attend these conventions, I mean, the JFK assassination has happened so long ago, and so much has been, you know, thought of, and so many topics have been brought up, so many conspiracies have been examined very carefully. How often is it that you run into something new that may sway your beliefs?
Well, I would have never entered this genre of history except for the fact that I found the answer to what happened, and that's what the book is about. When I gave my lecture at the JFK conference, I told everybody in the audience, I'm not there to convince them, I'm there to tell them what convinced me when I discovered the answer in the papers that I obtained at auction about 6 years ago, which is the Scorzani Papers, Otto Skorzeny was Hitler's top commando in World War II. And he did a number of very famous military operations during the war. So my interest was in Skorzeny. And this was 6 years ago. He surrendered to American forces in 1945 and was put on trial during the Nuremberg trials, but was found not guilty. 2 years later, he surfaced in Spain. In 1950, Skorzeny surfaced in Spain and then lived his life there, died in 1975. But the fact of the matter is, everyone knew what he did during the war, and then there was this great enigma of what he did after the war. So when his papers came up for sale 6 years ago, out of auction, out of Spain, it came right out of Madrid, I won the auction and I purchased the papers. My intention was to write a book about Skorzeny and solve the post-war enigma of his life, you know, to determine whether or not he was involved in the so-called Odessa organization, the secret rat lines for Nazis, or, you know, just what was going on with him. Well, when I got the papers, I got the early shock. Initially, almost within an hour or two of getting the papers, I realized, particularly because of my background in intelligence, that he was an asset of the CIA. It was very clear and documented in the papers. So from there, it expanded into research into these papers and what this might mean as far as his relationship, his clandestine relationship with our government. After the years, you know, it took me 3 years of research, 16 hours a day. I stopped everything I was doing to do the research, and it was pretty evident that in the papers, which are mainly business papers, that's what you need to understand, mostly business papers and some correspondence with his wife, Elsa, these papers revealed clearly that the businesses that the papers pertain to were the cover organizations that the CIA and other intelligence organizations gave him as a cover for his covert activity, which included assassination. This was during the earliest days of the Cold War, from 1948 on. And I can explain this in detail if you like, but so from 1948 on, Skorzeny was running an assassination capability during the Cold War for the liquidation of double agents and Soviet threats to Operation Paperclip. And by the end of the 1950s into the early 60s, that capability was expanded into something called an executive action capability, which targets foreign leaders for liquidation. It was that capability that was turned against the president in November 22nd, 1963. So Kennedy was killed by an in-house U.S. capability that was managed by Otto Skorzeny. Now, I must say that a lot of people, when they hear this, they immediately jump to this ridiculous conclusion that Nazis killed Kennedy. That is the farthest from the truth.
No.
Although, yeah.
Especially given the time span, because you mentioned Operation Paperclip.
Right.
That would have far removed him, just like Wernher von Braun. That would have kind of removed him from the Nazi party, maybe not taken away his Nazi sympathies, but yeah, just like you said, Nazis did not kill Kennedy. But
go ahead.
No, I would not put it past. Of course, if it's Operation Paperclip, the CIA is going to snatch him up as an asset. Absolutely.
Well, he actually, that was the documents I initially found is in the papers, which will be made public someday. You got to realize that all the papers that I have, the Skorzeny papers, will be made public. I hope to get them to an archive like Duke University, the National Archives, where the public can just review the things I'm talking about right now. But Skorzeny helped us find scientists initially. That's documented from the papers. I even interviewed the men who were involved with Skorzeny at the time. I've interviewed 12 men who knew Skorzeny personally, and to a man, they all said he was not a neo-Nazi. In other words, obviously served Hitler during the war, and when the war was over, he let it go. You know, he was a professional soldier. All 12 men I interviewed said that, and I must say the Israelis also use Otto Skorzeny by their own admission. And I have personally interviewed twice the Israeli Mossad agent who recruited Skorzeny, Rafe Atan. and this is documented. And I asked Rafi Eitan, by the way, captured Eichmann. Rafi Eitan also captured Eichmann. So, you know, I asked him, I said, you captured Eichmann. You recruited Skorzeny to help your country. What was the difference? And his response was, Eichmann was a Nazi. Skorzeny was a soldier. So, you know, he was a highly respected guy among the people that carry out this kind of work. And that was not known to the public and is, you know, was held a secret until I bought these papers. I was the first person to ever look at these papers and evaluate them. It came straight from the family. So it was a great secret. A matter of fact, the way you should look at this, if you had the CIA on one side and you have Otto Skorzeny on the other, well, they gave him an operational cover, which were the businesses that he was using. Well, when I bought the papers, I bought the bridge. I bought the cutout. With those papers, it allowed me to see the relationship between the CIA and the U.S. government and Joe Skorzeny.
Now, I don't want to just breeze over something very... I mean, this is spectacular what you said, and I kind of want to revisit it. You found these papers at an auction. Did they know what they had?
No. Well, they knew they had Otto Skorzeny's papers, and they were promoting the auction. It was a historic auction from a very reputable auction house, and it was a public auction. It was online. I mean, I was just one of many bidders. And I would prefer not to disclose the amount that I, you know, paid, but it was a lot. It was a lot. It was in the tens of thousands of dollars for these papers. Now, I bought them completely unaware that they would contain the answer to Dallas. And you must understand, this is definitive. These papers, these businesses that are in these papers are Dallas businesses and Dallas personalities. So the earliest business associations between Otto Skorzeny and these businesses that were intelligence and clandestine cover, starting in 1950-51, were coming out of Dallas. So when the president came into Dallas in 1963, there were businesses that were performing operational cover for an intelligence and clandestine network that included assassination years before he ever got there. He was channeled into an environment that was already a operational environment.
So let's go back to the CIA being involved. Why would they allow these papers if they knew of their existence? Like you said, the seller knew what they had. How would these get out? Why would they not?
Well,
shut
you asked. It's you asked it. A very important question, and here's the answer. It's very, and this is the business world. You know, this is the world that I come from. It's quite simple, actually. The CIA didn't know about it. See, you got to understand something. The capability, when you see the historical timeline and event matrix that I put into this book, the development of this capability with Otto Skorzeny began in 1948 in a very compartmented, isolated. Section of the CIA. So the way to look at this is the CIA was not running Skorzeny. That is not the correct way to say this. The CIA didn't know about it. What's the correct way to say this is this. There was an assassination capability inherent and located within one office of the CIA that was highly compartmented and highly controlled. So it's not like the entire CIA was involved. It was literally one office, and even then, within the office, it was probably on a need-to-know basis. So we may literally be talking about five individuals. I mean, this was a high secret, a high state secret, and it's not. It would have not been general knowledge, or it would not have been something that a lot of people would have known about. The capability itself, the executive action capability itself, I equate in the book to the use of atomic weapon. You know, the only way to launch this capability would have been by executive order, by the president, or, you know, the national command authority, the Secretary of Defense, that level. It was the presidential national command authority level capability. Somebody at the CIA couldn't use it, or it would even be impossible for a rogue use. This was a command and control situation. In other words, a target would be designated, but this to use this capability would have required executive approval. So this small office within the CIA called Staff D, and the guy who ran it was a man named William K. Harvey during that time period. He managed the program very much like maintaining a nuclear bomber. You know, there's U.S. Air Force personnel who man the bomber and people who maintain the bomber, but they can't launch the bomber. That comes from the president. Same with this capability. It was a very, you know, to kill a foreign leader, to liquidate a foreign leader, is a very, very risky proposition. So that capability was held at the highest levels of our government.
Yeah, and he was a handler, not an operator.
Well, William K. Harvey managed the program, and Otto Skorzeny, a foreign asset, ran the program for the agency, and it was a foreign program. So, you know, Skorzeny and the people involved in the actual business end of this capability were, in many cases, foreign operatives. For example, the man who was sent into Dallas to carry out the Dallas affair was a man named Captain Jean-René Sweatry. I talk about him in the book. So he was a French assassin. So it was a French assassin that was sent in to kill President Kennedy.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to kind of take it by steps because I'm trying to put it all together in my mind. So you acquired these papers that kind of explained where Scorsese come from, where his sympathies lay, and he was a professional soldier, not a neo-Nazi, so he kind of gave up the jacket whenever he came aboard Operation Paperclip. The CIA realizes what a beautiful asset this is. They take him and make him for all intents and purposes, a program manager. So what was his involvement with the actual assassination?
Well, his exact involvement may never be known unless documents surface, but what we say is this, that the capability, the network that was utilized in Dallas has links to the principal characters of the assassination. I'll give you three very good examples. The shooter, for example, or the man at least in charge of what would have been a sniper team. And I did not go into forensics in the book, so I can't tell you where the shot came from. But I can tell you that there was a sniper team that was sent in. It was led by a man named Captain Jean-René Sweatry, and he was a French OAS assassin, same guy that had been trying to kill De Gaulle. And the reason we know he was in Dallas is because of a declassified CIA document. It's publicly available. You can find it on the Mary Farrell site and a number of other places. Other historians have talked about him. Sweatry was flown out of Dallas the day after the assassination. What people did not know is he was part of Skorzeny's network. That's what's new. So there is already a document stating that this French assassin had been flown out of Dallas. The dynamic that has changed is the fact that the Skorzeny papers confirmed he was part of an assassination network. So if you want to believe, at this point, if you want to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald did it or didn't do it, it doesn't matter. Now you have a very big problematic situation where you have to explain the presence of a known French assassin in Dallas on the November 22nd and through the Skorzeny papers, confirmation that he was part of an assassination network. So the papers are also linked to Jack Ruby in a very big way, and I'll explain this.
Wow.
Jack Ruby, it's very simple. Jack Ruby had a business partner in gun running. His name is Thomas Eli Davis. Other historians have written about him. You can find his name as well in other academic studies, but people didn't know too much about him. Thomas Eli Davis was, and this is documented again through declassified CIA documents, Thomas Eli Davis was in Madrid just weeks before the assassination, where he met with a Madrid businessman named Victor Oswald. Well, no relation to Lee Harvey. Victor Oswald was a Swiss national. He was the Chase Manhattan Bank representative for Spain. He was also a former OSS, Office of Strategic Services, intelligence officer. But most importantly, he's one of the principal business partners of Otto Skorzeny in the Skorzeny papers. So the fact of the matter is, Jack Ruby's business partner in gun running met with Skorzeny's main principal business partner in Madrid only weeks before the assassination. And I could go on about this guy, but that's, you know, the basic crux of that connection. As far as Lee Harvey Oswald himself, he was a patsy, just like he said he was. He was an operational deception. He is also linked to the Skorzeny papers through something called the Toy Story Foundation. Most people are familiar with the name George Marinshield, who is the Russian who befriended Oswald in Dallas. George Marinshield and Paul Rygorodsky, two of the big Russians in Dallas, were intimately connected to the Toy Story Foundation. And as it so happens, on the board of directors of the Toy Story Foundation, listed on the board of directors with Paul Rygorodsky, is Colonel Herschel V. Williams, a U.S. Air Force intelligence officer, who is also in the Skorzeny papers and a principal business partner with Otto Skorzeny. And I could go on with these types of connections. In other words, every major facet of the story, whether it involves Oswald, whether it involves Ruby, whether it involves this mysterious French assassin that was flown out, Swetry, other aspects which I could, you know, talk in detail about, are all linked to the Skorzeny papers. And the reason I talk so definitively is I'm not coming up with some idea. I've never developed a theory about the JFK assassination. That's not what this is about. The reason I talk so definitively is I have evidence. I have evidence of what happened in Dallas on November 22nd. And that is what this book is trying to explain. It explains the history, the timeline, the event matrix, and the principal organizations and networks tied to the Skorzeny covert capability.
Well, just out of curiosity, let me get your take on this, because as I mean, you've added a whole new aspect to the JFK assassination. What if, and let's just kind of back out and look at the, you know, let's Google map this. Let's back out and look at the whole thing. Would it be fair to say that maybe this, maybe it's all true? That maybe the CIA made it this complex? You know, we've got, you know, all these theories, and now we've got this new one that you've introduced. Would it be beyond the abilities of the CIA back then to make it so doggone complex that it'll keep us guessing for years? That we can never quite pin it down because, you know, you've got Lee Harvey Oswald. Now you've got Scorsese. You have a French assassin leaving. You've got a Cuban connection. You've got all these connections. Would it be fair to say that perhaps it's all true? It's all part of the same plan?
No, that is not correct. That, I would not say that at all. In fact, Skorzeny papers are the definitive answer. What I'm stating is exactly what I put on the very front page of my book, and I'll read it directly verbatim to you right now. It's just one short couple of sentences. And this is, I put my name to this, and I put my name on the line for this based on the evidence that I've seen. I write here, as you open the book, the Warren Commission was not created to find the answer to the JFK murder, but to deflect attention away from all intelligence and operational links to the assassination. Witnesses that should have been called were not. Others acted as agents of deception. Superfluous and irrelevant data abounds in the documents obtained by equally worthless witnesses and individuals called to testify. Mountains of documents were created to confuse, mislead, and divert attention away from the true conspiracy that was linked to a covert paramilitary network operating in Dallas and linked directly to Otto Skorzeny. So the bottom line is this. There was the conspiracy is the cover-up. The capability is simple. It was already in place. When it came time to do this, the National Command Authority, and by that I mean the people in charge of the government, would have been in the know as far as the capability. They ordered it into action. Orders were issued. Orders were carried out. The There was no conspiracy with the mafia, with Cubans. This was a U.S. capability directed against the president. And if you get into the motive side, I state very clearly, in my opinion, because motive is not revealed by the papers, but I was able to somewhat, you know, find these pointers to the motive. They did this to save the country from an absolutely catastrophic pending doom that was imminent.
Well, I consider myself schooled.
Well, now the motive. I did speak briefly about the motive there. I have a small section in my book on the motive, which, you know, it could be debated because it is not derived from the Skorzeny papers. I derived the motive through parallel analysis. In other words, the papers revealed certain facts, and those are what I, you know, I put into the organizational studies, the link analysis, and the identification of individuals who either worked with or for Skorzeny. So that's pretty definitive. To get to the motive, I looked at major events that were taking place, and I point to two very specific pieces that would have played, in my opinion, to the backdrop of why they had to do this. And that was the Profumo affair that had broken England, which was literally almost about to bring down the British government, and the Bobby Baker scandal in the United States. And if you'd like, I would explain both of those. If not, the reader or the listener can look those up. But they are critically important to understanding why this action took place.
Now, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Al.
I was just going to say, give a briefing of those two events.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay. It's very simple. And the listener can look these up. They're very famous in history. The Profumo affair was a prostitution ring in England, 1961, centered around the prostitute named Christine Keeler. You can see pictures of her online, and it literally almost brought down the British government. She was sleeping with our equivalent of the Secretary of Defense, the Minister of Defense, McMillan, and she was also the girlfriend of the Soviet attaché in London. It was a big mess. It broke publicly, and Kennedy was watching the Profumo affair because in the United States there was almost simultaneously a scandal that was breaking in the United States called the Bobby Baker scandal. Again, there's online, you can see stuff about this. Bobby Baker was a political operative of Johnson. Vice President Johnson, he was being investigated for slot machine irregularities. And in that investigation, it was going to lead to something else he was doing, and that is providing a high-dollar a call girl service in Washington, D.C., these party girls, as they called them, were being provided for senators, House, representatives, lobbyists, and the president. So the president was utilizing the prostitutes from the Bobby Baker ring. And one of these in particular was named Ellen Romish. She was flown out of the United States, from what I understand, on a military aircraft a few weeks before the assassination, a month at the most, I think. But in any event, the president was sleeping with Ellen Romish. She was the wife of a West German sergeant who was here in the United States, TDY, on special duty. But she was prostituting herself and sleeping with the president. And it is suspected that she was also a Soviet agent. Now, that is research that has been done, and there's actually people working on it now as far as the books, as I understand. But the bottom line is this. I think that this is where, I had to kind of divine this because the Skorzeny papers don't reveal this. But I was thinking what would cause the National Command Authority to engage an executive action capability against their own president. It is my opinion that what was getting ready to happen was there was this scandal was getting ready to break, that the Bobby Baker scandal or investigation was going to lead to the public exposure of this information and expose the overlapping two prostitution rings. This would have effectively just totally disgraced the president. It would have destroyed the office of the presidency. It would have brought down the halls of government because of the other people that were involved, and it would have handed the Soviets a high ground moral victory. At the very height of the Cold War, when nuclear tensions were at its peak, this whole affair just overlapped and would have greatly affected what we call nuclear command and control. The president controls nuclear weapons, so this would have affected that. And so they had to do something to stop it. And in my opinion, there may be other factors, but they made a call, a dreadful call. It's probably just a gut-wrenching call to kill one man, to save the country, to spare the country of this knowledge. It was it was not a coup de grace or a coup d'etat. It was a coup de grace. It was, they were basically doing this to sacrifice one man. I equate it in the book to dropping the atomic bomb. And I knew Paul Tibbetts. You don't want to drop an atomic bomb. It's going to kill millions of people, but it would end the war and save a lot of lives, ultimately. Well, in this case, you're instead of killing millions, you're killing one. You're killing one to spare the country and prevent the adversary, in this case the Soviet Union, from gaining a great propaganda victory at a time we couldn't afford to have it.
So in other words, they stabbed Caesar to save Rome.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the capability itself had already been used, or not used, but proposed. It was the Skorzeny assassination capability that was being directed at Castro in 59-60, and then it was also that same capability at that same time period that was being directed into the Congo to kill Lumumba. So that assassination capability, which was already being directed at other foreign leaders, was merely turned against the home man. And you didn't have to have people sneaking around or going to the mafia. That would have been almost impossible, in my opinion. That's why I never agreed with conspiracy theories, because it just seems too incredible to think that you could keep that many people involved, this cast of thousands. It just doesn't work. But with the Skorzeny papers, it eliminates the cast of thousands, because the pre-existing capability, A, was in existence. It was already there, and it extended out of Dallas, and the number of people that would have known may have been less than 10, maybe 5, within the entire government. So there were people at the top who knew about the capability. They knew we had the capability, but they didn't know who was running it or managing it. They just They just knew it existed. So they had the ability to order it into action. And when I say the National Command Authority, I'm saying the President or the Secretary of Defense, you know, it would have been a very controlled capability. This is not something you can just put together. I mean, it's a big deal.
So given everything that you've discovered, what is your reception? I mean, how are other people receiving this? Because, I mean, Al and I have interviewed literally hundreds of JFK theorists, and we've gone everywhere from, you know, Cuba to Manchurian Candidate. Certainly, you've got to be ticking some people off. How were you received?
Well, I was received, normally I'm received with silence because people don't know really quite what to say. Even well-versed people in the so-called, assassination, conspiracy theories that have already been put forward. The difference here is this. If you had, and I'm just going to put this point blank. So you have the 2,000 books or more that have been written on the JFK assassination. Well, the names in the Skorzeny papers in the book that I just wrote are not in those 2,000. Because, as I state in the book, if you're focused on Oswald, or if you're using the declassified documents or the Warren Commission, then you're using the deception. See, there's no way to get to the answer. And you can't just develop something in your mind. That won't work. This case can only be solved with evidence, and the Skorzeny papers is the evidence. Now, if the American public wants the answer, then I just wrote about it. If they don't, and they want to continue to believe in the mythology, follow some other hypothesis that continues to go down rabbit holes, that's their prerogative. I can't control that, and I can't control whether or not I make people mad. All I know is this. I know what I've seen. I know what these papers contain, and I know these papers are going to be made available to the American public so that they can make their own determination. I feel very confident that my analysis is correct. You know, I didn't do it in a vacuum. I murder boarded this, you know, with friends of mine who are very adept, you know, researchers themselves, and I tried to make sure I didn't make any analytical mistakes. There are mistakes in the book. I think I called Dallas the capital of Texas, for example. So, you know, there's some small, you know, there's some small errors in the book. Somebody may also argue with my determination on motive. That's fine. But the bottom line is the existence of the capability, and Skorzeny's connections to it, the people that are tied to the networks that I described, is absolutely irrefutable because they're documents, and these documents tell the story that I just described to you in the past few minutes.
Now, I got to ask, did you already have a theory about Skorzeny which sent you in search of these papers, or did you just – I mean, this is fascinating. Did you just happen to be at an estate sale, and they're like, coming up next, Skorzeny papers, will start the bidding at $50?
No, I was I didn't know. I like military history, and I think the day that this happened, that I found out about the auction, I was just I was researching military history. I read about World War II history, so I was reading and doing online research on World War II, and I think I was doing queries on Otto Skorzeny, and I noticed the auction came up. And when I saw the auction, I said, oh, my gosh, you know, Skorzeny's personal papers are going to be auctioned. So I immediately signed up for the auction, and, you know, I went into the bidding process, which was telephonic. It was on the phone, and I won. And so the auction house had reviewed the papers, and they admitted to their historical significance, stating that whoever gets them might be able to find some nuggets of the Cold War or something, you know. But I had no idea. I mean, I had no interest in JFK history or the conspiracy. My only interest in JFK before I acquired the papers is the fact that my birthday is May 29th and JFK's birthday is May 29th. And I also remember as a small boy at 5 years old, my the stoic response from my mother and father when they saw that he had been assassinated. But as far as I was concerned, I mean, I had no idea these papers contained anything related to the JFK assassination. It was the farthest thing from my mind. But when I got the papers, like I said, I initially, almost within the hour or two, realized he was an asset of the CIA. That I was like floored. But it was still several months later before the Dallas angle to it, arose out of the research. But there came a threshold. There came a point where I was like, wow, you know, these businesses are covers for intelligence and operational activity during the Cold War. And then, you know, I noticed, and they're coming out of Dallas. So, and then, so as I did the study of the people involved, the links and the linkages to the story continued to a point where I was just in my room one day and I go, I think this has tied to the assassination. I just reached a point where I knew it. So that's when I knew I could write the book, you know, and get it out.
Now, Al and I, like I said, we've interviewed a lot of JFK theorists, and certainly Al, before I came aboard the House of Mystery, there are a couple that, you know, possibly fear for their lives due to what they've discovered or what they've revealed. How do you feel about, are you maybe kind of, you know, being a little bit more cautionary now that you're releasing this information?
No. I mean, we're free men living in the United States of America, gentlemen. I mean, I've been a soldier all my life. I've served my country in the Marine Corps, the Army, and the Air Force, you know, over 37 years total service, 5 wars. I mean, you know, dangerous, you might could say, was my business, but I don't fear anything in that sense. I mean, this is it's been a long time. It's very historical. The papers are not classified documents. They are historic documents that relate an unfortunate truth. I mean, the American people have wanted an answer, have felt that there was perhaps some conspiracy, and now I'm here to tell the American people that that is correct. There is a conspiracy. That the United States government killed Kennedy, and that they used an in-house capability to do it, and then they had a cover-up, which is the Warren Commission. The Warren Commission is a false document. It is designed to cover and spare the American public the unfortunate and ugly truth of a pending doom that the national, you know, authorities, you know, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, it's tragic. They felt in their minds this was their way out to save and spare the nation this tragic news. So that's the way I see it. Now, like I said, people can argue motive, and that's fine, but they can't argue about the network. I mean, if you want to look at it this way, a monkey, you know, the wrench has been thrown into the engine. A monkey, you know, it's the engine's going to lock up now. I mean, people can avoid talking about the Skorzeny papers all they want to, but they exist, and the book has been written. And by the way, I will state this, and this goes back to your question just a moment ago. I wrote this book in a way that you don't need the papers. If you read what I wrote and look at the operational links, the network analysis that I did, you still should come to the same answer without the papers, because once the papers expose the individuals and organizations, you can go to other studies to confirm the things that I said. The papers help, and the papers certainly provide an instant confirmation of the people and associations. But even without the papers, the exposure and explanation of the link analysis that's in this book can stand on its own without the papers. And therein lies the problem for people that are going to try to counter it. Hmm. This is the power of evidence.
Hello? So where do you plan on going with the information now that you have it? And what's your plan of attack to bring this to the public?
Well, the plan is already in. There's no – I thought it was my civic duty when I found the answer – I mean, you look at it one way, I had evidence of what happened. If I had done nothing, I would have been an accessory after the fact. So I did it the way I thought it was necessary to do it. I wrote this book to bring the evidence forward to the American people. And from there, I mean, my work is done. I mean, the papers themselves need to be made public so that, you know, scholars and American people can see them and make their own determination. I've done the best I could. As far as I'm concerned, my work is done. You know, I bought the papers. I saw the answer. I revealed them. And, you know, I'm still an Air Force officer. I'm retired. So loyalty to my country and to the American people. I feel like I've done my duty, in other words. So that's basically what I can say about that.
What exactly do you hope would come from this? Like, what do you hope happens? What would be a good outcome for you?
Well, for me personally or for the country, I think for the country, it's going to be quite a challenge because a lot of books and histories have been written. So we're going to have to come to terms with the true history. So I think it would behoove the United States government, the United States people to do a little soul searching here and realize that I think the great moral lesson out of this is that people in high positions of power, the presidency and other high positions of power, their personal lives and the things that they do have major, ramifications. They have to be focused on the things that they swore they would do. You know, this is about having a moral compass and doing the right thing. People have got to do the right thing if they're the leaders of the country. I mean, so I think that's on that side of it. And then as far as the American people are, they can rest easy now that the answer has been found. They can also, I think, take some measure of, they should feel good that an Air Force officer found the answer and came forward. That, in other words, that there's not a government conspiracy that's going to continue to keep this under wraps. I mean, there are men and women who are true to their oath to the Constitution, and they're not going to be involved in anything that is extra legal or illegal or immoral. So I think that's the important thing. It's a dark history. I didn't want to find this, but it came to me. So it's destiny. I personally have not lost any love for my country and my fellow Americans. I don't see this as a tragic mark on American history. It is what it is. These men they made a decision to use the capability. Was it extra legal? I think it was. Was it right or wrong? It looks to be wrong, but, we don't have all the facts yet. Can it be overweighed by the fact that they did it to save the country? Now, again, that's my opinion. Perhaps. I don't know. We just need to accept it as the evidence presents itself. Other countries... Oh, go ahead.
No, because back then they were just as convinced as we are today that they were serving their country and they were serving with a sense of patriotism. So can we fault them for that? You know, was it this dark, star chamber type conspiracy? Perhaps, but not necessarily.
I think they were caught between a rock and a hard place. I think that if this information about the prostitution rings and the entire the Soviet penetration, the honey trap and all of the nasty details of what was going on in D.C. and in England, I think it would have been an absolute unmitigated disaster. I don't even know. You know, I would say this, gentlemen. I don't think this was a matter of national security. I think it was a matter of national survival. And, this was the most desperate, probably, gut-wrenching act in history. I think there was a great deal of relief that the assassin team was headed by a Frenchman, Jean-René Sweatry, who was, I guess the point here is that I don't know what American soldier would have the intestinal fortitude to kill an American president. Or any American for that matter. It would be very, very difficult. Oswald was a patsy. It was an incredible, move to use Oswald because he had been to the Soviet Union. He was a low-level Soviet agent. And by using Oswald, they held a trump card, I believe, against the Soviet Union. If the Soviet Union, who knew about the prostitutes, if they had come forward and said, we're going to, you know, if they had come forward to disclose the information that the national authority was trying to prevent from coming out, then the national authority could have said, no, you know, your guy killed our president, World War III. In other words, on the back burner was this even more terrible scenario that they would have probably had to go to World War III rather than let this information get out about what had happened. And Oswald was their ace. By using him as the patsy, they held a card over the Soviets and, you know, a war card. And so that was their failsafe.
So now, okay, now for our listeners, do you have a website or some sort of blog or something that they can get in contact with you or see what you've got and any late information?
No, I don't. I don't do too much. I don't do any social media. The book is available on Amazon.
Okay.
It's called The Skorzeny Papers, The Evidence for the Plot to Kill JFK. And I don't do any promotionals. I haven't even done, you know, and really only one little book signing. But, you know, it's not really about the promotion here, gentlemen. It's about the information. So, you know, I didn't do this for fame and glory. It's not – I did it because I found the answer. So.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do is we'll have you posted up on our website and on the station site so people can just click and buy your book with one click.
Do I have time to make a final comment?
Yeah, you sure can. Go for it.
All right. I'll leave you with this. There's a famous Zapruder film which shows the president being shot. I think most Americans have heard of it. And it's that famous film that was acquired the day of the assassination. The man who acquired that film on the day of the assassination for Time Life Books was a man named Charles Douglas Jackson, C.D. Jackson. Now, what Americans may not know, two things about him. One is he was the top psychological warfare officer of the United States government at the time of the acquisition. He was literally the top psychological warfare officer. He is linked to the Skorzeny papers. But more importantly, 20 years later, when the film was finally released to the American public, that was in about 1975, I believe, around that time frame, Walter Cronkite and the young Dan Rather went into a documentary NBC special and went frame by frame. And they showed that the analysis of the film showed that the president was shot from the Texas Book Depository and not from the, you know, anywhere else. Here's the problem now with the Skorzeny papers. The company that did that analysis for the NBC special was ITEK, I-T-E-K. That company had on as chairman a man by the name of Frank Lindsay. Now here's the problem. Frank Lindsay in 1948 was the operations officer for the Office of Policy Coordination, which is the forerunner to the CIA, the Office of Policy Coordination, run by Frank Wisner, that brought Skorzeny in as the initial assassination capability into an office called PB7, run by Colonel Boris Pasch. So the bottom line is this. The Zapruder film is tainted from front to back, from its acquisition by C.D. Jackson, who is linked to the papers, to the analysis by ITEK, whose chair is Frank Lindsay. So there's another example of how the papers are definitive and how the documentation and the evidence is going to be decisive as soon as people understand what is in the Skorzeny papers.
Okay, then. Well,
Major
Ralph Geddes, thank you very much for being on the show.
Well, thank you, sir. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable.
That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.